The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. The pandemic continues. I'll get to some numbers here in just a second. But I want to preface what I have to say in just a little bit by just reminding you of what the Church of God, just some of the basic principles of health that the Church has known for many, many years. Of course, the Church is... upheld the laws of quarantine to withdraw yourself when you do come up with a contagious disease. But before that, of course, we strive anyway to practice the laws of health. Over the years, the Church produced the seven laws of radiant health, one of the seven laws of success. That's a booklet by Herbert Armstrong. The law of health, to serve God, we need to be in our peak condition physically. Mr. Armstrong, if you know anything about his writings from over the years, he emphasized in multiple articles and even booklets, as I say, that it's not natural to be sick. That's abnormal. And so he said to avoid being sick, we have to fuel our bodies with the proper food. And, of course, he commented on how that few people really understand what proper food or proper diet involves. He emphasized the importance of drinking pure water. He talked about breathing in pure air, getting outside, or at least going to the gym to get in sufficient exercise. Our bodies were designed to move, and together with all that, we need our rest as well. We need good, sufficient, deep sleep together with proper diet. Regular elimination is also very important. And together with that, of course, frequent cleaning, cleanliness, hygiene. That's certainly all part of the laws of radiant health. And then he talked also about maintaining a positive, cheerful, active, peaceful mindset. How we think, and this, as I said yesterday, is why the widespread panic in so many ways, I may have said it yesterday in class, I can't remember. I sometimes get my wires crossed on which lecture it came up in. In any event, when you see so much panic and worry and fear, as far as our physical health is concerned, that just makes matters worse. That doesn't mean we shouldn't look at problems and just dismiss them or just whitewash everything and say that there's not really a problem there. But if you have a lot of people trying to stir up fear and worry, that's not going to make matters better. It's going to make matters worse. And then, as I say, with respect to quarantine, in one sense, you look at the way so many governments and health officials and people even, ordinary citizens in nations around the world, you see the way that they're taking precautions now to avoid coming into contact with someone who might be sick or to keep themselves under quarantine if they themselves are sick so that you don't spread the disease. That springs from God's law of love. You love others so much that you don't want them to be near something that's very, very contagious, and so you withdraw yourself. God's people have known this for years. We've known these principles for years. Now we all fall short here and there, and that's why we need, you could add to what I just described and through these points, the importance of prayer. The prayer of faith shall save the sick. I mentioned yesterday the fact that Jesus went and laid hands on the sick and prayed for them. praying for others, intercessory prayers, praying for those who are struggling with sickness and disease. We should be doing that daily as God's family. But as I've encouraged you to do over the last few programs, with respect to the mass hysteria that we're seeing on the news, on the cable news channels, on the internet, in the newspapers, coming from the New York Times, Saturday's edition, I mentioned it yesterday, 160, maybe 200 million are going to come down with this disease in the United States. We're looking at possibly 1.7 million casualties, 1.7 million Americans dying before all of this is said and done. And the New York Times, of course, is not alone. Now, you look, as I've been doing, you keep track of the numbers daily. About 24 hours ago, these figures were updated after the radio show yesterday, so maybe 22 hours or so, there were 174,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus worldwide. Worldwide, 6,705 deaths. That was about 22 hours ago, almost a 24-hour cycle. As of right now, there's 184,000 cases, so 10,000 more are added to the chart, and there's 7,167 deaths. That's 462 more than yesterday, right after the radio show. So we've added 460 that have died over the past day, over the past 24 hours. Now, you compare these numbers with the ordinary flu here in England. It's a little harder to get to some of the statistics. In the U.S., you have the CDC website, which keeps a weekly track of influenza, the number of people being tested, the number of people who test positive for the flu, and then the number of deaths, the number of flu-related deaths. And every year it fluctuates. It can be anywhere between 20,000 and 80,000. But I mentioned yesterday with respect to Italy, they have a lot of people who die every year because of the flu. It's an older, aging population. 22% of Italians are over the age of 65. A lot of them die every single flu season. A lot of their elderly. And Italy, of course, has been hit harder than others with this coronavirus. Here in the UK, the Public Health England website estimates that an average of 17,000 people have died from the flu annually between 2014 and 2019. So England, it's quite a bit smaller than the U.S. You're looking at about 68 to 70 million people. And an average of 17,000 dying annually because of the flu. Now, more recently, if you look at, like I said, the CDC keeps track of these figures on a week-by-week basis. I'd encourage you to go look at the CDC website. That's the Center for Disease Control in the United States. And this is the very latest for this flu season. They estimate that 36 million Americans have had some kind of flu illness throughout this season. I guess it goes back to maybe September of last year. And they also know that 370,000 Americans have gone to the hospital for the flu, and that it's resulted in 22,000 deaths. 22,000 people have died in the United States over the past year. And really, it's been over the past 6 months, because that's essentially the flu season. But if you stretch it out over the course of a full year, 22,000 people dying, that amounts to, on average, 60 deaths per day. 60 per day. But as I say, the flu season, it's about 5 to 6 months a year. So really, it's more like 120 people dying per day. I gave you the figure for coronavirus. That's worldwide, 462 in the last 24 hours. Maybe since I didn't get the last 2 hours, maybe it's about 500. In just the United States alone, during a flu season that on average is probably about average, maybe a little bit low, 22,000, because we've had years where it's been 40 or 50,000. But think about 120 Americans dying every day because of the flu. That's just in the United States. Now, as I say, according to the CDC, the 36 million figure, that's an estimate. They estimate that's how many people came down with the flu in the United States. Of a nation of about 329 million people, most people, obviously, they don't go into the hospital when they get the flu. They, like I do, they go to bed instead. They go and rest. They, whatever. Everybody's got their different approach, I suppose. But according to the CDC, this season, a little over a million people have been tested for the flu. They've been tested for the flu, and 222,000 Americans have tested positive. So I told you about how many died, 22,000. Of the number of Americans that have tested, they've gone to the hospital, they've taken the test, it's been confirmed, one out of five of them were confirmed, you have the flu. You have influenza A or you have influenza B, one of the two or one of whatever the strain is for that season, you have it. You were tested. You tested positive. And of those tested, 10% died, sadly. Most of them elderly. But when you hear about the mortality rate or the death rate for the flu, obviously the media, they don't say 10%. They base it more on the estimate, which ranges from 20 to 60 or 70 or 80 million per year. And that's how they come up with this figure of 0.1% or 0.1% that die as a result of this flu. 0.1%. Now, coronavirus is supposed to be somewhere between 5 to 10, well, I guess if you look at South Korea, somewhere between 4 to 10 times more lethal than the ordinary flu. Dr. Fauci said 10 times. If you look at the stats in South Korea, it's about 4 times. This is what we're told. But now if you look at the stats and do a little bit of the math, and I'm sure as I go through some of this, hopefully Mr. Loker's listening back at Edmund, and he can double-check some of these figures. I'm sure to get one of them wrong. Hopefully it's not as bad as that mistake on MSNBC where they said if Michael Bloomberg wouldn't have run for president, instead given those $500 billion to every American, what was it he said that, or the commentator said it amounted to like $1 million per person. They were way off on their math. In any event, going back to the coronavirus, which is supposed to be more contagious and more lethal, far more lethal than the ordinary flu. So far in the United States, and you can see that on the chart that we keep showing, 4,743 people have tested positive for the Wuhan flu. 4,743. And as of just a little bit before the show, 93 Americans, this is for the whole Wuhan season, 93 have died. That amounts to about 2% of those that have tested positive. They've died. Compare that to the 10% who tested positive for the flu this past season. Now, it is true that the Trump administration has been sharply criticized for not testing more people. We've got to get more tests out there. This has been the one thing they've been able to key on, his critics, because, well, he put in the travel ban. Incoming flights from China, I think that was on January 31st, and then last week he added Europe. So he's taken action. I forget when he established his coronavirus task force, but you can see every time he speaks at the podium, he's got quite a gathering behind him. The Surgeon General, Dr. Fauci is usually close by, and all of these other medics, these doctors on his team. Of course, the Vice President, Mr. Pence, he's heading it up. So evidently, going by what the talking heads say, there should be more testing, and maybe that criticism is justified. But suppose that a million Americans had been tested for coronavirus, and suppose that 222,000 tested positive. Those are the figures for this past flu season. The death toll, if you look at the bottom line, I hate to put it this way, it sounds kind of cold, I suppose. It's certainly not just a matter of numbers, but the one thing that doesn't change is the death toll. You can see that whether or not a million have been tested or not, what we know is that in the United States, 93 people have died. Now, that could go up. Most from that number is from the past, I guess, 3 weeks or so. But that doesn't change. That doesn't change whether you've tested a lot or not. In fact, the more you test, the lower that if more test positive and the death rate continues to go up at about the pace that it's been going up, it could be that that percentage goes down. It certainly does if you have these, you know, these wild estimates, like what came out of Ohio last week. If you're going to go with the estimate of 100,000, well, then if you start doing the math and you compare it to the ordinary flu, you have to say at some point there's got to be quite a few more people dying off for this to be as serious as an ordinary flu season. Now, we're told it's far worse. And maybe there's an explosion of statistics coming in the next 2 weeks. We'll see. The virtual lockdown that went in place yesterday, I guess that's for 15 days. We've been told this is the critical juncture. All the charts tell us we're on the same track as Italy a couple of weeks ago. And what if it's even worse than Italy? Well, what if the lethality rate of this virus actually turns out to be about the same as the ordinary flu? What if it's lower? Does anyone, including Dr. Fauci, does anyone absolutely know for sure? Let's take Ohio as an example, because it was 5 days ago that the Ohio Department, I played the clip for you yesterday, the Ohio Department of Health said that 100,000 Ohioans were carrying the coronavirus. So you have the number of confirmed cases. I think that's about 50 right now. And then you have the estimate. I guess that would be similar to the 36 million estimate. Those that in America have had the flu this past season. The Ohio Health Department said 5 days ago that 100,000 Ohioans were carrying the coronavirus. And you know what else they said when they announced that? They said that figure would double every 6 days. So this is day five from that announcement, which means that tomorrow, if you're in Ohio, if you're listening to the program in Ohio, tomorrow it's estimated by your health officials that 200,000 Ohioans will have contracted the coronavirus. Now, that's an estimate, as I say. That's not the number of confirmed cases. But if you take the estimate, and if you pull out 0.1%, that would be ordinary flu figures. 200,000 infected means that there would be 200 deaths together with it. Perhaps the disease is slow moving and it'll amount to that soon enough. We'll see. Hopefully not. There's 50 confirmed cases of coronavirus in Ohio as of this moment. And how many deaths? right now, zero. Not one person in Ohio has died from coronavirus. The health officials say that by tomorrow it's 200,000, and by next Tuesday then, it doubles every 6 days. Next Tuesday, it's 400,000. So you do the math. 200 deaths would be an ordinary flu. 10 times that. 10 times that, you're looking at 2,000 deaths. As of this moment, there's zero. I would encourage you, as this crisis unfolds, to take nothing away from God's laws of radiant health and from the laws of quarantine and from the curses that are coming upon our nations and our people. Curses that are going to intensify and get so much worse than what we're... And they're going to be actually happening. They're not going to be media hype or maybe some kind of mixture between an actual disease and media hype that takes it to a level that's 5, 10, 15, 100 times over. We'll know in a few weeks' time. We'll see. We'll be able to compare hard numbers. This is how many people died. We may not know all that were affected, but we know how many died. Look at the death rate. If you see that, you can compare it to the flu season from this past year in the United States. You can compare it, as I discussed yesterday, you can compare it with the number of people who die in car accidents every day, every week, every year. You can compare it. We know about how many people died in the Spanish flu from 1918 and 19. You can compare it to that. You can compare it to the death toll in World War II. Anything. I want to take you through a timeline to just keep this in mind as we see the dust settle from this lockdown. It's a virtual worldwide lockdown for the next 14 or 15 days. And I just want you to remember some recent history. Everyone's on board with the panic right now. As I covered on yesterday's program, I'd encourage you to go back and to listen to that. But let me take you back to February 28th. This is two and a half weeks ago. I think it was on a Friday night. President Trump, before this crisis exploded, President Trump went down to Charleston, South Carolina. He gave a rally down there, and he talked about all of these hoaxes, these attacks on his presidency. He talked about the Mueller report and investigation, and then the Ukraine phone call, and then the more recent attacks, people that were blaming him for the spread of this virus. You'll recall, keep in mind that the New York Times called it the Trump virus. Others called it Trump's Chernobyl. This was Trump's Hurricane Katrina. He botched everything. He didn't see it coming. He downplayed it when it was upon us. He didn't do anything, they said. So here is President Trump on February 28th. This is like 2.5 weeks ago, clip one.
One of my people came up to me and said, Mr. President, they tried to beat you on Russia, Russia, Russia. That didn't work out too well. They couldn't do it. They tried the impeachment hoax. That was not a perfect conversation. They tried anything. They tried it over and over. They've been doing it since you got in. It's all turning. They lost. It's all turning. Think of it. Think of it. And this is their new hoax. But, you know, we did something that's been pretty amazing. We're 15 people in this massive country. And because of the fact that we went early, we could have had a lot more than that.
This is their new hoax, he said. And then the 15 people he referred to, this is from February 28th. 15 people at that point had died. Today, as I said earlier, what was it, 97 or 93? 93. So you have an idea there of how it's increased over the past 2.5 weeks. And I'll leave it to you to decide whether or not it's an epidemic, a pandemic, an ordinary flu, or whatever. It's just something to think about. You have a lot, given what I've given you here today, you have a lot to compare it to. But there he is saying that this is their new hoax. He said, but look, we were on this. We were on this before anyone else. And he's right. He's right. He banned incoming travel from China in January when his political opponent said it was racist for him to do that. At the time, you'll recall, they were all consumed with impeachment. Nothing about coronavirus. Nothing at all. He was stopping incoming flights from China. He had formed his coronavirus task force. But after this speech, February 28th, the talking heads, they just exploded. How could he say that the coronavirus is a hoax? How could he say that this sickness is a hoax? They lied. They've lied to this day. I saw a clip on Grabian. I didn't bring it with me. A clip from yesterday, one of the cable shows. Well, we would have been ready for this were it not for the president saying that this sickness was a hoax. He didn't say it was a hoax. He said for them to come after him, blaming him for what came out of Wuhan, China, blaming him for the crisis, blaming him for the epidemic, saying he was unprepared, that he hasn't done anything. He said that is their new hoax. So they exploded in anger. And President Trump, at that same time, every time he's coming in front of the camera, I'm just taking you again back through the recent chronology. He talks about his task force, their level of preparedness. This is what we're doing. But then he also provided context, as I've tried to do in recent programs. And he talked about, look, the number of deaths that we have yearly with respect to the flu is far more than what we've seen with this virus. Here's what he said on March 2nd. So this is a few days later. This goes back, I guess, to 2 weeks ago. Clip two.
You know, interestingly, we were discussing, and a question I get asked a lot by people is, on average, you lose from 26,000 to 70,000 or so, and even in some cases more from the flu. We have deaths of that per year worldwide. It's hundreds of thousands of deaths from the common flu. And they ask, you know, what's the difference and how does this differ? And I guess there are things that are similar and things that are different. Every one of them is different.
Worldwide, as he said, there's hundreds of thousands of deaths because of the flu every year. The latest figures, keep in mind, for this pandemic, 7,167. And the world is certainly, when you look at Europe and the United States, throw a little Israel in there as well, an almost total lockdown. Shelves in supermarkets are empty. 7,167. Now, what's true about this virus is that it does, evidently, it spreads easily. It's a new virus, but I think you'd pretty much say that about just about every flu strain each season. That's why they come out with different vaccines all the time. The mortality rate among the elderly, that's high. Most of the ones dying are 80 and above. And they also have underlying health conditions. So their immune systems aren't quite as strong. Is this cause, given the other dangers that we face daily, that we face yearly, given the other dangers that are discussed in Bible prophecy, is this cause for widespread panic and universal shutdown? And how much of it is politically motivated? Perhaps we'll find out more on that as we proceed, not just with this show, but in the days and weeks ahead. There's a lot we still don't know, even about this disease. But here is the president. You heard it on March 2nd. And here he is on March 10th, here again, emphasizing the fact that, look, we've got to keep this in perspective. This is clip three.
Look, right now, I guess we're at 26 deaths. And if you look at the flu for this year, we're looking at 8,000 deaths. And, hundreds of thousands of cases, but we have 8,000 deaths. So you have 8,000 versus 26 deaths at this time. With all of that being said, we're taking this unbelievably seriously, and I think we're doing a really good job. And again, the task force headed up by the vice president has been fantastic.
Now that's him coming out with the task force. They're busy, as he said, working on arresting the spread of coronavirus. And he's saying that just this year, so I think he's taking it back to January 1st, but the CDC says this season, going back to September, it's 22,000. But he says just this year, this would be 2.5 months, 8,000 deaths from the flu compared to 26. And you say, well, 26 then, but now it's up to 93. Well, how many more flu deaths have there been during that same time period? He said, look, we've got a task force. They're doing a good job. We're responding to this. Now, following these comments and the explosion of anger over his comment at that rally about the hoax, this is what Trish Regan, she has a show on Fox Business Network. She said this just a week ago. It's from, what would that be? March 10th, I believe. On her program, she got up and talked about how that this is a coordinated attack on President Trump. Here again, coming from the radical left. This is what, this again is Fox Business Network. Trish Regan, clip four.
The chorus of hate being leveled at the president is nearing a crescendo as Democrats blame him and only him for a virus that originated halfway around the world. This is yet another attempt to impeach the president. And sadly, it seems they care very little for any of the destruction they are leaving in their wake. Losses in the stock market. All this, unfortunately, just part of the political casualties.
That's from 1 week ago. She said they're blaming him for the virus. You'll recall, maybe some of you, the clip I played from Vice President Pence. He was on the show a week ago Sunday with Chuck Todd, and he said, look, the rhetoric has been dreadful. It hasn't helped this at all, the level of panic because of how you're reporting this. And Chuck Todd was angered by that. How could you say that? We're not blaming anybody for this. Well, and then he mentioned the Trump virus column at the New York Times. And there's plenty of other examples. That's the truth. That's the truth of the past few weeks. Just the few weeks. Now, Trish Regan's show, that was 1 week ago today, on Friday, just last Friday, Fox suspended her. Now, this is not MSNBC. This is not CNN. This is Fox, the same channel that owns Fox News. They run Fox Business as well. They suspended her show because of that little monologue that you just heard. This is from the New York Times. It says, the host of Trish Regan, primetime, told viewers this week that concerns about the coronavirus were yet another attempt to impeach the president. Concerns about it. This is the New York Times, again, being dishonest. You heard what she said there. President Trump has never said, I'm not concerned about it. He's tried to keep it in perspective. But he says, look, we have a great task force, and he banned travel from China in January. And so here is this commentator at Fox Business. She gets up on her monologue a week ago to defend the president against these scandalous attacks. Trump virus? Oh, yes, that's what they were saying. Says the Fox Business anchor Trish Regan, whose on-air dismissal of the coronavirus as another attempt to impeach the president left her cable network facing a firestorm of criticism this week, has been removed from her primetime slot for the foreseeable future, the network said on Friday. They were subjected to a firestorm of criticism. And if you saw how Chuck Todd reacted to Vice President Pence, tell us where we've blamed any of this on President Trump. Tell us. We're adults here. They were very sensitive to that. And you can see it from the way that they responded, even to Regan's monologue from a week ago. It says here, Ms. Regan's 8 p.m. program is on hiatus until further notice, Fox Business said in a statement. The network declined to say if Ms. Regan would continue and so on. Now listen to this. This is from the New York Times. Still, the abrupt removal of Ms. Regan, a reliably pro-Trump personality who has twice interviewed the president, came as right-wing media stars have faced growing scrutiny for commentary that played down fears about the coronavirus and suggested that the illness had been overhyped by President Trump's critics. You can't do that, as I covered yesterday. You can't say don't panic. We've been told what to do. Panic is the rule of the day. Fear and hysteria is the rule of the day. Panic buying at the supermarkets. It's happening right here in Stratford. That's the rule of the day. And if you go against that, if you even question that, well, you're going to end up suspended like the NBA basketball season. Did you know that before the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus a pandemic, that CNN did? Have you heard this on the news? I'm bringing to mind here a chronology that I think might be good to remember as we see the dust settle from this. Like any flu outbreaks, this one will die down eventually. Could be in the next few days, could be in the next few weeks. Or if we listen to some of the commentators, this could go on for months and months and months. It could change the way we behave and shop. It could change our lifestyle for years. We've got to take a wartime footing. Say governors of major U.S. states. Sanjay Gupta, he's the medical guru on CNN. From March 9th, a little over a week ago, this was at CNN, says, starting today, you will notice that CNN is using the term pandemic to describe the current coronavirus outbreak. It is not a decision we take lightly. While we know it sounds alarming, it should not cause panic. Well, they'd change their tune on that eventually as well. But Sanjay says, so why now? The World Health Organization hasn't called the coronavirus outbreak a pandemic, nor has the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So the WHO and the CDC hadn't even called this a pandemic yet. CNN led the way. CNN. Their medical guru, Sanjay Gupta. Well, it was a couple days later that the WHO came out and said, yeah, this is a pandemic. Fox News, they fire Regan a couple days after that. In between there, you had President Trump address the nation. And then, of course, he came out on Friday amid the panic and declared a national emergency. Now, I think politically speaking, even if the Trump administration has had to take action that maybe it wouldn't have taken were it not for the panic, it's hard to see how that this really hurts him politically, because how can this not arrest the spread of coronavirus if everybody is essentially locked to their homes, if they're under house arrest, if we're being discouraged from going out anywhere at night except for shopping for groceries, but the restaurants are closed, the theaters are closed, Broadway's closed, the sports arenas are closed. Even public gatherings of over 25 people in many states That's now banned. You go into restaurants that do stay open, the tables are spread out. You've got to keep a safe distance from other people. Of course, it's going to die down now in the next few weeks. How could it not? But is this the pandemic that everyone is saying it is? And how does it compare to other sicknesses, to other diseases, to other dangers? And is there any political motivation behind any of this? Well, if you think that there's no political motivation, certainly in the United States of America, if you think that there's no political motivation behind any of this coverage, then you haven't been paying attention for the past 4 years. Just a year ago, keep in mind, a year ago, it was all CNN, MSNBC, it was all Bob Mueller. He was about to bring down the president. He was about to destroy this president. That's been their aim from the beginning. And I'm not suggesting that that's the whole aim of the news coverage today. But certainly in the United States, and really, there's plenty of people abroad, even world leaders, that despise this president. And we've been talking for the past 3-4 years about the derangement syndrome, how people are thinking irrationally. They're telling people to panic. That is irrational behavior, particularly with the kinds of numbers that I gave you at the top of the program. One Democrat tweeted yesterday, "The Dow has now erased the entirety of gains made since January 2017 when Donald Trump took office." Why would he connect it to Trump coming into office? Because this is a Democrat who is excited that the stock market has cratered. And there's many of them. Paul Krugman, he's the economist at the New York Times. He says, "Economists," this is a tweet from yesterday, "economists, myself included, often make a point of saying that the stock market is not the economy, which it isn't. It is, however, pretty much the Trump presidency. Take away his magic talisman, and there's nothing left. You take away the stock market boom, and there's nothing left for this presidency." Can you see why they're so giddy at MSNBC and at CNN? And even Fox News caving into this intense pressure, this firestorm of rebuke at Trish Regan. "You can't say that this is in any way politically motivated." Chuck Todd correcting the vice president. "You can't say that." Everybody has to say, go for a panic buy. Empty off the shelves. Get all the toilet paper. Get the hand sanitizer. Get the food. Get the canned food. Get everything. Because this is going to happen for 8 months, 9 months. This is World War II. Sean Davis at The Federalist. He tweeted out a week ago. It's from March 12th. He said, "Corporate political media hate you, they hate the country, and they will stop at nothing to reclaim power to rule over you. If that means destroying the economy via a panic they helped incite, all while running interference for the communist country that started it, so be it." What caught my attention there, we do read The Federalist frequently, but where he said that they'll stop at nothing to reclaim power, that just made me think of the quote in Saving America from the radical left, where my father says, "We're getting a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power and stay in power. They have no respect for the rule of law. They believe they are above the law. This evil spiritual power is influencing the radical left." Now, more recently, just to underscore the spiritual component here, there is such a thing as a real spirit world. And I understand people that would say, look, this isn't media bias that's stirring up this reaction, because it's worldwide. Why would Italy lock down its borders in the north because of CNN? Well, I would submit to you that there is a real spirit world. There is a being whose goal, whose aim is to blot out Israel. And together with that, to destroy this presidency. To cause an irrational mass hysteria. To stir up emotions. So that people are fighting in the aisles at the grocery store. It's time to buy. This may be the end. That's what they're told. That's what they hear on the news. Richard Palmer, he last week wrote this trumpet brief on how that, just coming back to the crisis, if we want to focus on the health crisis, we can do that. There's plenty of different angles to this story. That's why we've covered it as much as we have over the past week and a half or so. But looking at just the point of sickness and disease, it used to be that with the spread of disease, people would look to God. Now, maybe they were pagan gods of all sorts, but they wondered if they were being cursed. But as Richard said last week, now it's just government. Government is the God. Government is who we look to. Government is who, that doesn't necessarily mean we submit to it, because there's a built-in hostility to authority above us too. That's human nature. But it's all government. Government, they either fix it or it's all their fault. Our faith, our hope, like Jeremiah 17:5 says, is in other men. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, he wrote in the wonderful World Tomorrow booklet, this is in chapter 2, he said, governments promise peace but bring wars. They promise benefits for the people and then extract from the people the cost of the benefits plus excessive costs of government. It says government promises are empty. The people are pawns who fork over the money in order to get a part of it back. We fail to find in human government any knowledge of life's purpose or dissemination of true values. He said later, when we take a hard, cold, realistic view of conditions and trends, they do point inevitably to a fast approaching world crisis of combined nuclear power, starvation, uncontrollable disease epidemics, crime and violence, and the extinction of human life on this planet. This is what we're facing. Government is part of the problem. Media are part of the problem. Disease epidemics, that's part of the problem. Crime and violence, war, starvation, malnutrition. These are the curses that have set in because of our sins. One commentator tweeted out, the Democrats' coronavirus bill, you heard about the bill a few days ago, I don't know if it's passed through the Senate yet, some $50 billion of relief. And of course, the airlines, they're looking for relief. So many of these other companies, they're going to need to be either given relief or even bailed out because they're laying off people. So here comes big government. And Donald Trump has shown he's not averse to spending a lot of money, just like Barack Obama. And so, as I say, looking at it politically, if he wants to print more money and bail some of these companies out and ride through this difficult time for 15 days, he's probably going to come out of it on top politically. But what is the long term? And looking at what government is doing now, speaking of this bill, the commentator says, what a joke. It uses the pandemic as an excuse to push through policies that have nothing to do with disease prevention. See, just a lot of pork barrel spending. Just another excuse. Another excuse to spend more money. This article from Reason.com says the House bill seems to be more focused on leveraging political points than fighting coronavirus. You see, this is supposed to be a pandemic that the politicians, that the members of the media are very concerned about. They just want what's best for the people. They want to help people in this time of crisis. Are they helping? Is government the solution? Is the left-wing media helping solve these problems? Or are they making matters worse? Well, examine the evidence. On tomorrow's program, I've got a few other clips here that I was hoping to get to, but perhaps tomorrow we can go through some of the acts that, and really some pretty shocking steps that government has taken to supposedly solve this problem. I say shocking because I think if America's founders were to come back and look at what certain governors are doing, or even what Washington, D.C. is doing, just a massive overreach of government power, and we're seeing it all over the world. Yesterday, I read that passage in Matthew 9, Jesus, where he was walking through, I forget where, Galilee or wherever, and he saw the people. They had no shepherd. They were wandering about. They needed leadership, and Christ, it says, had compassion, and he told his disciples, he told Peter, he told Andrew, he told the rest of them, John. He said, look at the condition in our world. Look at these poor people. They're just like sheep without a shepherd. They have no direction. They have no guidance. They're just wandering about. They're, like Paul says in Ephesians 4, they're just tossed to and fro. Have we ever seen the circumstances or the coverage or the events just tossing to and fro or jerking back and forth from one day to the next? Look at this year. I was talking about the pace of events this year, even before the coronavirus crisis. We're not even through the third month of the year. We're still less than a fourth of our way through 2020. We're living in the last days, and God's trying to wake us up. God's trying to wake us up. There was a National Day of Prayer in the United States on Sunday, but there was nothing in there about repentance. There were some really amazing scriptures, and to see that in a presidential proclamation, well, I thought it was pretty cool, actually. But nothing in there about repentance, sad to say. Nothing in there about obedience to God's laws. And that's what God is trying to draw our attention to, cause and effect. You have all of these agencies, all of these organizations. You have all these operations. They're all working hard. Mr. Armstrong said it in that World Tomorrow quote. They may work hard, governments, but they don't know, Isaiah 59, they don't know the way to peace. They don't know how to solve the problems. They're hard at work. There's Bible verses that talk about ambassadors, leaders. They're the head. There's plenty of those, but are they solving the problems of this world? God wants to get our attention. He wants to get your attention. And he wants to see if you're willing to humble yourself and to drop to your knees, and to cast all of your cares upon God, and then to have the humility and the repentant attitude needed to get up from those prayers and to change and to start obeying God's laws his physical health laws, and of course, the spiritual laws of God's Ten Commandments. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, hopefully we can get to some feedback on tomorrow's show as well. But you can email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.